It's Marriott's 4,000th hotel.
Yes, I know. Isn't that incredible? Anyway, we've got in Chef Matthew Morrison.
If you think you're loaded, you're not.
And food and beverage director Mark Sewell, who are going to tell us all about all the fabulous things going on there.
Sewell. Yeah, see, I had it right.
What did I say?
You said Sewell. Oh. Are you a Sewell, Mark? No, you're a Sewell.
Sewell.
All right.
Sorry, Mark. Okay. Anyway, and have you heard about Great Taste Tyson's? If you haven't, you should. It is a terrific event happening May 31st and June 1st. In fact, Foodie and the Beast is going to be doing a live show there. Plug, plug, plug. But in to tell you all.
I love them, by the way. They've got a great show.
In to tell you all about it is Greg Nivens. He is the guy behind the show. He's bringing in all these terrific people who are going to be doing food demos and great tastes of food and tons and tons of beer and wine. He's going to tell you who's going to be there and why.
Master impresario Greg Nivens. Mm-hmm. And Eric Platt is here from Pacific Prime Wines. It's easy for me to say.
Mm-hmm. Happy to be back.
And he has brought the taste of New Zealand wines to us today. And why don't we start with you? Why don't you tell us about Pacific Prime and about the guests that you brought in here today?
Absolutely. Good to be back here. Thanks for having me.
Of course.
Pacific Prime Wines imports 5 regional and family wineries from throughout New Zealand.
Mm-hmm.
So we do Carrick from Central Otago, and I think Steve Green's been in the studio.
Yep, that's correct.
In the past. We do. We have John Forrest here, one of the pioneering winemakers from Marlborough. Anna Seyfried is here from Nelson, New Zealand. Her family is the oldest winery on the South Island of New Zealand. And we have Mel McLennan from Hawke's Bay, New Zealand, with his winery, Mai Mai Vineyards, helping pioneer, you know, Bordeaux blends and things like that from the North Island.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also do Lake Chalice from Marlborough. So 5 wineries from different regions throughout New Zealand.
Well, why don't we get Mal up to the microphone and let's talk about your vineyard. Tell us all about it.
Well, we began growing grapes in Hawke's Bay about 1994 on land that my parents purchased after Dad returned after the Second World War, and they farmed there for about 40 years without having us kids. And my wife and I decided to go back and develop the farm into a horticultural block after Mum and Dad retired, and we are now living back in the homestead that my parents built.
Mm-hmm.
Our family had been very keen on wine, and we drank wine, and wine was always available to us as we were growing up, and it wasn't a very hard decision for us to make at the time to plant grapes.
So what kind of wines are you growing?
Well, at the time, we started with Sauvignon Blanc, which was just taking off in New Zealand as a varietal.
Mm-hmm.
There'd been some changes in our industry in the late 80s, and it wasn't very difficult to make the decision that Sauvignon Blanc was going to be a flagship for us, and it's proven to be the case, as we've seen the massive growth of Sauvignon Blanc exports to all parts of the world, including the United States. And back when we started, I think our exports of Sauvignon Blanc were in the tens of millions, tens of millions. Now it's in the billions.
Hmm.
So the industry's grown on the back of Sauvignon Blanc for the last 20 years.
Well, as you've been working with the Sauvignon Blanc grape and over the years, how have you seen your wines change? How have your tastes changed and how have your wines changed to reflect
I think overall the tastes have developed into a more complex style.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a difficult grape to grow. And it's a relatively simple style of wine. There's not a lot of oak influences. You don't do a lot after you harvest the grapes. Most of the work is done in the vineyard.
Mm-hmm.
Winemakers use a lot of different techniques from time to time. Sauvignon Blanc, it's about the flavours, the simple flavours that you get from the vineyard and from the regions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're quite distinctive in New Zealand. And the regions, the flavours we get from Marlborough are very distinctive. And it's what's really been the catalyst for the growth in the industry.
So I assume you're pouring a Sauvignon Blanc first, is that correct?
No, I'm not. Hawke's Bay is a very unique region in that we do a lot of things very well.
Mm-hmm.
It's the oldest wine-growing region of New Zealand. It began in 1850-something with settlers who came out and brought their culture with them, and wine was a very important culture to the European settlers.
Mm-hmm.
Hawke's Bay has a lot of unique microclimates because mm-hmm. of our geography and proximity to the sea and proximity to the mountains, and our area will be the east coast of the North Island.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sheltered by hills and things. It's a very warm area, or has pockets of very warm area, so we can successfully ripen the Bordeaux and the traditional Rhone grapes.
Okay. I'm so sorry. We got to have to move on to our next guest. So can you tell us which wine you're pouring first, please?
Today we're going to be pouring Merlot Malbec blend.
Okay.
We'll try
Terrific.
It. And then we'll come back and talk about it.
Okay, great. Okay.
All right. Now we're going to talk to the guys from Coastal Sunbelt and Parker Farms, Lindsay and Russell. So as I said when I introduced you, we all eat food, but we have no idea how it gets from where it was to our plates and what happens to it in the whole process. But Lindsay, why don't you first give us a 411 on Coastal Sunbelt, and then we'll get into it.
Well, again, thank you guys for having us. Mm-hmm. Coastal Sunbelt is one of the largest produce and dairy distributors in the Mid-Atlantic. Mm-hmm. We travel to 6 different states in the region and work very closely with the farms to get their product to the customers. I personally work with the hotels in the region, but we do everything from, you know, the pizza shops to chain restaurants to white tablecloth restaurants to the large hotels to assisted
like
living.
Like the Marriott Marquis,
Like the Marriott Marquis, yes. Yes,
we
do.
That just works so well.
It does.
And Russell, Parker Farms is in
Oak
probably
Grove,
40
Virginia.
Miles from here, right?
Yeah, we're based in Oak Grove, Virginia, which is 30 miles due east of Fredericksburg.
Which one? There are 4 of them.
The one in Colonial Beach.
Okay.
We grow 12 to 1,300 acres of vegetables there in Oak Grove.
Mm-hmm.
We ship as far north as Maine, as far south as Florida, as far west as Chicago.
Okay. Right. But now you used to work with Coastal Sunbelt. So how did you start working with them and then wind up on the farm?
Well, before Coastal Sunbelt, I'm 37 years old. I've been doing produce since I was 16. It's
okay.
All I know.
Okay.
I've bounced around from a couple different companies similar to Coastal, and the job came available at Coastal about 7.5 years ago, and I jumped on the opportunity. How I got to Parker's was when I worked for Coastal, going to the farm tours, going out and seeing where the food was actually growing and what fertilizers they used and how they got the water to the field and how it was packed, how it was cooled, how it was shipped was just mind-boggling. And when the opportunity arose to come to work for Parker's, I jumped on that opportunity as well.
All right, well, let me get you guys into it, because reality is, if you say tomatoes, for example, 2 tomatoes can look exactly alike, but they can be totally different in terms of origins, nutrition, shipping, and all of that. So how does sourcing directly from farmers, which is the Coastal Sunbelt way versus how some of the major supermarkets do it, how does that change and enhance the nutrition value of what we're eating?
Well, you have to think a lot of produce is grown in places like California and Florida because they have the wonderful weather that, although I love the Mid-Atlantic, doesn't have year-round.
Right.
But 4 items, whether it be tomatoes or broccoli or lettuce or asparagus or strawberries, being able to get those within 24 to 48 hours versus product coming from Florida or California, which takes a couple of days, it very changes the flavor profile of the different fruits and vegetables. Being able to bring it from farmers like Parker, they are able to hold it on the tree or the plant longer than out in California, they have to pick it greener. So it actually doesn't get as many nutrients into the fruit or vegetable as it would if we're getting it from Parker.
Well, I think we hear, the buzzword today, wherever you dine, when we're talking about restaurants, is farm to table. But the truth is, there's not a lot, although there are relationships with farmers between chefs and restaurants and farmers, a lot of times they're using organizations like Coastal Sunbelt. So it's really going from farm to Coastal Sunbelt to the restaurant.
That's correct. And one of the things that Coastal prides itself is working with the farmers. We want them to be able to do what they do best, which is grow fruits and vegetables. So with our distribution footprint, we're actually able to help the farms and backhaul their produce. So instead of them having to work on distribution, we're bringing it into their warehouse and being able to ship it out to the individual restaurants.
All right. So a carrot is in your field. How long does it take
He's
carrot?
He's like, I don't do carrots.
We don't do carrots.
There you go. Okay, you did it.
All right.
Broccoli is in my field.
Radio is theater of the mind. Okay. Use your imagination to pretend you got carrots for crying
you
out loud.
Broccoli. Gorgeous.
Right, broccoli's in your field. How long does it take to get out of the ground in your field to their trucks and then to Coastal and then to, the Marriott Marquis to be devoured?
Broccoli is about 100 days from seed. So once we plant it, well, the fruit will yield in 100 days.
And then it's plucked, and then it's plucked. How long is it to my table at Marriott Marquis?
Well, if Coastal Sunbelt and Lindsay gives me an order on Monday, we harvest it Monday afternoon, we ice it Monday evening, we put it on a truck before midnight Monday, and it's sitting at her front door on Tuesday morning.
And then?
And all of our product is rotated between a day and day and a half. Wow. So probably 3 days, 4 days max to get from the field.
So it's still bleeding when I get it.
Right. Yeah. So it goes from plate. Now, you guys, Coastal Sunbelt does these mobile farmers markets. What are they, and who are they for?
We do them for all different types of customers. We were actually at the Marquee a couple weeks back. Chef Matt was able to bring out his whole culinary team to be able to go through all of the product. We do both a combination of specialty and local product. Specialty is all the crazy things like your kumquats or your pluots or, you know, anything you can imagine from all over the world.
Is that considered crazy?
It's probably one of the...
Yeah. What is this product again?
It's Hydro Red Sorrel.
It's gorgeous. How do people use it?
You can use it as an herb or you can use it as a... Just a garnish into your salad.
Okay, it's beautiful.
So what we do is we take one of our regular refrigerated trucks that we do deliveries in. Mm-hmm. We put some shelving up in there and put local and specialty product and take it directly to the chefs so they can see, taste, touch, smell all of these items that... whether it's new in season or whether it's new to the market, and they're able to... figure out how they're going to use that on the menu and do education for their sous chefs and kitchen people as well.
Well, just last question before we have to take a quick break. I'm just curious, how does the farm come up with what they're growing? I mean, other than the obvious reasons, like we talked about New Zealand and growing Sauvignon Blanc grapes because they work there, as you're deciding what you're going to plant at your farm, are you hearing from chefs what they want? Are you hearing from markets what they want?
Mostly from retailers. Okay. We do a lot more with retailers than we do with food service guys, and we're going to grow the business with the food service guys in the next couple years.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, we have to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit about strawberries and maybe have a little bit more New Zealand wine. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
The American Veterans Center invites you to attend the 2014 National Memorial Day Parade, Monday, May 26th at 2 p.m. along Constitution Avenue. Join thousands as we honor the sacrifices of our military from the American Revolution to today, featuring musical performances, marching bands, celebrities, and active duty personnel, all made possible with support from Strayer University, Wells Fargo, and visitmyrtlebeach.com. To learn more about how you can see the parade, visit nationalmemorialdayparade.com.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
If you're a fan of great military movies like Saving Private Ryan and Lone Survivor, then you will love the GI Film Festival coming to the D.C. area May 19th through the 25th. GIF is Sundance for the troops, where Hollywood and the military come together to screen incredible new movies, host parties and awards, and more. Plus, GIF is the only place where you can walk the red carpet with real military heroes and Hollywood stars like Gary Sinise, Ricky Schroeder, and Adam Driver. So don't wait. Get your tickets today at GIFilmFestival.com. That's GIFilmFestival.com.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We are talking to, Lindsay and Russell were talking kind of in the area where we wanted to go, and that is, I mean, do you, along with taking this truck to the chefs and showing them your produce and everything, I mean, do you consult with them? Do you go in and say to I'm picking somebody to the folks at Marriott Marquis or an Eric Siebold at City's End. What are you looking for that you don't have now that we might help you with? Does that happen? Are there...
No, it definitely does. We try to give the chefs as much information as we can, but they are always bringing items to us, whether it be something local, whether it be a specialty item, whether it be a regional item from a different country. They're always bringing stuff back to us to be able to take to our purchasing team, which we have about 14 different people, whether it be specifically to local or imported product. And we are looking for that for them.
Well,
I think local in general is something that has actually been spearheaded by chefs.
Absolutely.
I think they are the ones who are asking for it and being able to demand it. Talking to Russell, they're in the process of starting to grow. How many acres did you say of the asparagus starting in Virginia?
It's going to start in Georgia. We're going to grow about 400 acres of asparagus between Georgia and Virginia.
Wow.
So that kind of thing is driven by chefs, by demand.
But that is a four-year process. We won't have asparagus next year. Sorry, guys.
But we do have gorgeous asparagus in studio. Can we just give a shout-out to some of the farms that you're working with? Because you brought in all this gorgeous product today. It's like a little farmer's market stand in here. Tell me where you got the strawberries from.
They're from Westmoreland Berry Farm in Westmoreland County, Virginia. They, as of yesterday, they just started their pick-your-own. So the farm is open for pick your own. I actually didn't pick them. I just bought them from the store. I didn't walk out to the
field. Lazy, Russell.
I'm sorry.
That's no fun. Okay, tomatoes are from?
Hummingbird Farms, both the heirlooms and the mixed cherry tomatoes.
Okay, and then we've got all that gorgeous dairy from?
Trickling Springs Farm. They are a farm in Chambersburg, PA, which
we do buy their milk.
Right, and we're actually doing a farm tour with them on Tuesday, so that's
fantastic.
Super exciting.
And then lastly, from your farm?
No, the asparagus is from Westmoreland Farm also.
Your broccoli.
Oh, that's from our farm out of South Carolina. We'll have that in Virginia around the 5th of June.
Excellent. All right. Just lastly, tell everybody where they can find Coastal Sunbelt and where they can find Parker Farm.
Coastal Sunbelt, located in Savage, Maryland. Our website is www.coastalsunbelt.com. Great. Or on Twitter at coastal_sunbelt.
Excellent.
Parker Farms, we're based in Oak Grove, Virginia again, and you can find us at parkerfarms.net or Parker Farms on Facebook.
Excellent, all guys. Right. And Lizzie, if chefs or people in the industry want to find out about your mobile tours, they just call? How do they find out?
You can definitely either go on our Facebook page or call into the office. I am our unofficial head of our local committee, so they can always ask for me and I can point them in the right direction.
Fantastic.
All right, thanks.
Thank you both.
Back to Mel McLennan of My Creek Farms. Not farms, vineyards.
Vineyards.
Yep. I got hung up there on the farm.
We're stuck
thing.
On the farms.
We used to be a farm, and now we're a vineyard.
There you go. Okay. It's live radio. You got to give me a break.
Okay,
here.
So you poured us a beautiful Merlot. Tell us a little bit about it.
This is our Merlot Dominant Bordeaux blend. Merlot and Malbec are two of the classic Bordeaux varietals that make up the Bordeaux blends. And Hawke's Bay has got a reputation for growing the Bordeaux styles. It's one of the few regions of New Zealand where we can grow these grapes and get them ripe enough to make a good wine out of. There's about 93% Merlot in this and about 7% Malbec, which is about the blend that they would use for Malbec in most of these styles of wines. It doesn't need a lot of Malbec to change the texture or the aromatics of this wine. And we think it's just enough to... The Merlot maintains its Merlot-ness, if you like, and doesn't take away from it. It loses its identity.
It's beautiful.
It's got a
nice
lovely, bright fruit flavors. These are really symptomatic of what New Zealand wines are.
All right.
Excellent. All right.
Now we're going to ask you to step aside. Anna Seifried, step up here.
Hey, hello. How's it going?
Hi, how
Seifried
are you?
Seifried Estate Wines in Nelson, New Zealand.
Nelson, New Zealand.
Almost named after me. So close.
Not even close.
So we're located right at the top of the South Island of New Zealand.
Okay.
Beautiful,
and
sunny spot.
Tell us a little bit about your vineyard and your family and everything.
So this is a family winery started by my parents. First planted back in 73, which makes us one of the oldest in the South Island.
Okay.
Today, mum and dad are both still very involved, and then myself and my brother and sister are also working in the business. So,
everybody's in the business.
It's very much a family team effort.
So let's talk about the kinds of grapes you're planting down there.
So, of course, Sauvignon Blanc is the flagship variety from New Zealand. So Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, But actually in New Zealand, in Nelson, we're doing a lot with aromatics. So we do Riesling, Gewürztraminer, Pinot Gris. Most recently is our Austrian white varietal Grüner Veltliner, which is really starting to make a bit of an impact. And, you know, our vines are still very young with the Grüner, but we feel that potentially it could be a variety to
Is it wetter down there? I mean, what made you decide to go that route?
No. So actually, Nelson is one of the sunniest provinces in the country. So we get bright, sunny days, but we're right on the coast. So we have quite a moderated, you know, the winters, we'll get a frost, but then by 10 a.m. in the morning, it's a beautiful, sunny day, and we're all back in our shorts and T-shirt. Summertime, you know, 85, maybe 90.
Let's go to
90.
New Zealand.
Yeah.
So are we invited?
Always.
All expenses paid, of course.
Well,
we'll talk. She's like, that's like a crazy.
Let's talk. Dr. Forrest said yes. I'm with him.
Yeah.
So what are we going to taste?
So today, actually, I thought, you know, we are New Zealand. Let's do the flagship. Let's show you a Nelson Sauvignon Blanc, which you may not have seen before. So it's kind of an interesting...
We'll be talking to you about that, won't we? All right, so while you're pouring, Lee Brian Schrager, are you there?
I am here.
Hi.
Good morning.
Welcome to Foodie and the Beast.
Everyone.
Gotta ask, are you Lee or are you Lee Brian?
I am Lee.
Well, hello, Lee. So, in reading the book, your friend Whoopi Goldberg wrote the intro, and she said that writing a fried chicken book wasn't exactly on your bucket list, which means you must have talked about it. So why'd you write it if it wasn't on your bucket list, unless you're planning on living a long life?
Well, I hope a combination of both. I'd like to think I'll live a long life, and
good
I'd
for
like
you.
To think that, you know, fried chicken, like burger, pizza, barbecue, is iconic American comfort food, and the whole thing really came about. I, as you probably know, produced both the New York and South Beach Food Network Wine and Food Festivals.
Right.
And last year at the 2013 festival, I was talking with Tricia Yearwood in a corner, talking about our love for fried chicken. And we, Tricia and I both share the same publisher, Pam Krause at Clarkson Potter. And we were talking about fried chicken, and Pam came up and started, you know, listening to our conversation. And she said jokingly, "Hey, Lee, you should really do another book on fried chicken." And I'm like, "I'm not doing another book. You know, one was enough." And that kind of, you know, blew past. And a few weeks later, Pam called me and said, "You should really do a book on fried chicken. You're so knowledgeable. You always are on social media talking about your favorite fried chickens." And I wasn't even really aware that I always talk about it. You know I like it. And that's kind of how the whole thing came about, just a love for it, a desire to do another book with a great team, and you know, obviously, Tricia Yearwood's a big fan of it, so it didn't hurt that she was.
I feel like you're dropping a lot of names
here.
Yeah,
Whoopi Goldberg,
Tricia Yearwood.
Well, my name is David Nellis. Remember to drop that down the road, would you, pal?
Sorry about that.
We're kidding. So,
you know, the New York Festival, actually, we created the fried chicken event for Whoopi Goldberg, so
right,
fair to drop her name. And Tricia Yearwood has been supporting both our New York and South Beach festivals and been a friend because of that for many years. So it seems natural to drop the names the same way.
Just teasing you. I mean, listen, we're drinking New Zealand wines in studio, so we're a little ahead of you this morning, perhaps. Well, so let's talk about fried chicken, because I think a lot of people in the United States feel that fried chicken is purely a Southern thing. And your book dispels a lot of that, because there's so many different kinds of fried chicken. So how did you go through all the regions to come to find all the recipes that are in your book?
Well, I think the first thing we should demystify is that fried chicken did not come from the South originally. And, one of the things we talk about in the first chapter is that it originally came over from Scotland in the say 1700s and worked its way over to the Deep South, and obviously the slaves and the plantation owners. And that's really the history. But, you know, not unlike the empanada, the tamale, the burger, you know, every region has a fried chicken. There are few states, I can't even think of a state that doesn't have, you know, is not producing great fried chicken. And, you know, as we traveled around the world, you know, from Yotam Ottolenghi in London, you know, everyone had their take on fried chicken, whether it was a white tablecloth restaurant like a Thomas Keller's restaurant in Napa Valley ad hoc, or a street stand in the Deep South. You know, chicken, fried chicken really is, it's time for it. It seems like it's relevant, and it's, you know, the basic of food. It's food right from the bones.
That brings up the next question, because you would have had to eat an awful lot of fried chicken or do a bunch of research into recipes. Where'd all the recipes come from? How did you dig them up?
Oh, so social media, for one. I mean, we actually last June started out on a trek, and we traveled to 13 states trying fried chicken. And I think the most interesting thing that we learned is every time we tried a great fried chicken, we heard about another fried chicken. So whether we were in someone's home and they were showing us the fried chicken, like a lady in Venus Williams who cooks food, cooks fried chicken for one of these floats during Mardi Gras. That's the only time of year she really makes fried chicken. You know, so we'd be talking with her, and she would tell a fried chicken story. Or we'd be in a great restaurant like Mary Mac's in Atlanta, and the waitress would serve us the fried chicken and tell a story about another fried chicken that she was familiar with. So if you look at the list of where we started when we started this whole kind of road trip of fried chicken and where we ended, we probably only used about a third of the restaurants that we intended. We found so many great ones along the way, and clearly there could be a fried and true, you know, two and three, without a doubt.
Well, I'm sort of curious. I mean, did you come across any bad fried chicken?
No.
Really?
We didn't come across any that we said was not good. We came across some that we said, you know, plenty that we said, hey, it's just good.
Right.
Some that we said was excellent. Some we said
you should have gone into politics. You know that, Lee.
No. I wish we could. Listen, I'd like to say that we had any. I'd like to tell you a horror story. You know, people in the media, people always want to hear, you know, things that didn't work out. And there was not one bad fried chicken along the way. As I said, there were some that we loved, some that were very traditional and standard, which were fine, but, you know, a lot of those. And some like Asha Gomez in Atlanta, you know, her kind of emerald green fried chicken that's marinated in herbs, which was fantastic.
It sounded fantastic.
I will tell you that I think what the book is a collection of 54, 55 great fried chicken recipes geared towards the home cook and some really fantastic side dishes along the way.
Well, I agree. And I think also for people who read the book, and I've gotten through about half of it, there are great stories in here about people's love of fried chicken or their families and why they make it and how they make it the way they make it.
I almost married a fried chicken once.
Well,
it's not too late.
I still love it.
I'm only wife number three. He can have wife number four anytime.
They die of exhaustion. What can I say?
All right, Lee, we want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. Can you just tell everybody quickly where they can find this fabulous book?
Well, right now until Tuesday, the book is released nationally on Tuesday. Hopefully you find it in every bookstore around you. But from now till Tuesday, I would go to Amazon.com or FriedAndTrueCookbook.com, you know, the website for Fried and True. So Amazon's the easiest, Fried and True. And then if you need to wait till Tuesday, go to any Barnes & Noble, any retailer, any independent bookstore. Shop independently if you can at a bookstore near you.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining this morning.
Nice speaking with you guys.
Bye-bye, okay, Lee. Thanks. All right, this is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back. Hey, foodies, join us, David and Nikki Nellis of Foodie and the Beast, at the American Lamb Jam on Monday, May 19th at Eastern Market. Bring your taste buds as top D.C. area chefs serve up fantastic lamb dishes paired with local craft brews. There's a live butchery demo and a very special VIP hour. Visit fansoflambdc.com for tickets. That's Lamb Jam on May 19th at Eastern Market.
Paid for by American Lamb Board.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Discover what it takes to become a pilot at the National Air and Space Museum Stephen F. Udvar-Hazy Center in Chantilly, Virginia. Join them for the 10th annual Become a Pilot Family Day and Aviation Display. See dozens of visiting aircraft on display for one day only. Enjoy hands-on activities, story times, and kite flying demonstrations. Saturday, June 14th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., sponsored by Booz Allen Hamilton. WTOP is a proud media sponsor. Visit airandspace.si.edu. For details.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus.
It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And we mentioned at the top of the show that the new Marriott Marquis opened. It's huge. It's like 1,170 rooms. It's Marriott's 4,000th hotel. It's hard to believe. Executive Chef Matthew Morrison is in with us from the Marriott Marquis, along with Mark Sewall, who's the food and beverage director for, I guess, the whole area. Isn't that what you are?
No, I'm the director of restaurants.
He's the director of restaurants. Faulty information. What are we going to do? But we want to talk about it. You guys, how many restaurants are in this hotel?
We have 5 restaurants in the hotel.
Yikes. Well,
are all 5 open already?
Yeah, we opened. We've been open for 2 weeks.
Right?
We opened on May 1st.
I knew the hotel was open, but I didn't know if all the restaurants opened at the same
day
time.
Day one, and we've been busy since day one. So
I bet.
It's very exciting.
Well, can you give us an overview of the restaurants, and then, Chef, we can get into how you just put together the menus for all of them?
Sure. Well, to start off, we have our Anthem restaurant, which is our breakfast and lunch restaurant. And it's there where we have incorporated some of the themes from the original Hot Shops.
Get me a sirloiner.
And just as you walk in, you have a 9-seat stand, just as, again, the original Hot Shop, which was a 9-seat root beer stand. And again, we've incorporated, Mr. Marriott himself has selected a few items that we have incorporated into the menu. That Chef and his team have done a great job of executing them.
Is there a sirloiner?
No, sir. But we have the Mighty Mo.
What?
Yeah, the Mighty Mo has probably been the most popular. So that's Anthem. And then in our lobby, we have the lobby bar. So as you walk into the hotel, we have the sculpture. It's called the Birth of the American Flag, which is sort of the theme of our lobby. It's a 56-foot sculpture. And there we have our lobby bar. And then we have High Velocity, which is our sports bar. Probably the highlight there is we have 48 beers on tap, 36 TVs. And then we have a full-service Starbucks, as well as we have our whiskey bar, which is Dignitary.
Okay.
We have about 90 whiskeys, craft whiskeys, from around the country, as well as from around the world.
It's like a little city.
Yeah, it is a little city.
And the coolest thing is you have an underground, not the coolest, a very cool thing is you have an underground concourse that runs right to the convention center, which makes
We are the headquarters hotel for the convention center, and yes, there's a concourse that folks can walk directly over to the convention center from our hotel.
That's crazy. So, you know, Chef, let's talk a little bit about Anthem, because we'll start there. Were you given like a blank slate and you had to come up with a menu that was somewhat reminiscent of Hot Shops for those of us who were natives and remember Hot Shops?
Sure. I think we for the most part came up with a blank slate, but had some direction on what wanted to see on the menu. So for the majority of the menu, sort of, you know, keeping in line with the concept, but then having the nod to the Hot Shops items featuring some of the classics.
But since you are a hotel, I mean, understandably, I mean, you're representing the region, but for tourists who come to town who don't know what a Hot Shop is, given that they don't exist anymore, how are you going about educating them within the menu?
Sure. Well, it's obviously just one of the training points for our service staff, as well as some of the artwork in the restaurant is reminiscent of the original Hot Shops and things like that. And they can get a whole history lesson, so to speak, from our staff and some of the people on hand, who that was kind of the education piece in the training.
Are there some dishes that, I mean, along with the Mighty Mo, which was iconic, I was telling these guys before.
Well, for people who don't know what
the Mighty Mo is, makes the Big Mac look like a little sister. The Mighty Mo was a killer sandwich. But you guys used to have the best fried clams in Bethesda. I mean, is that still on the menu?
Fried clams aren't on this, the first cut of the menu, aren't on the menu. But a couple other things,
I'm going to pick at the hotel.
we also did the teen twist. Some of these are some of the true classics, I guess, that came from pretty high up along the chain, so to speak. The orange freeze, hot fudge ice cream cake, and...
The meatloaf.
I got my first zits because of that hot fudge ice cream.
And so let's get to the salt roasted beets, because they look fairly familiar to something that I was doing with the chefs in your kitchen. Am I correct?
Yes, you are correct. This was part of the co-creation. This is actually, we're proud to say, is going to be Nikki's beet salad that's going to be on the menu.
Yes, so it should be. I created the recipe.
Is it going to be called Nikki's beet salad?
Yes, we're getting the final approval for that right now, but yes.
I did create the recipe.
Can we call it David's wife Nikki's beet salad?
No. Okay. People who don't know, the Marriott brought in a bunch of writers to their corporate offices, which are glorious, and had us cook with the chefs to try to revamp some of their dishes that they were serving and give our perspective on them. And it was a lot of fun and very interesting. And people really did fun things and gave incredible feedback. I thought it was a great way to learn about how a menu comes together.
Yeah, it definitely was, because it is, you know, it's, you can sit down and write it on a piece of paper and it sounds great, but until you've actually tried it or worked it out and got the feedback from anybody else on the outside, you know, in the industry, was great, and, you know, so it helped us create some great dishes.
I got a question for you. 1170 something rooms and all these restaurants, but you guys focus a lot on local sourcing and all of that. Is the Ukraine considered local? Because where's all the food come from?
I mean, that's, as you heard, obviously, from Coastal earlier, you know, we have a lot of great suppliers in the area. And because it's become such a focus over the last, 10 years, the suppliers are a big help. Whereas before it was, you would have to sit down and just, you know, get on the internet and get on the phone and try to find the locals, farmers and things like that. Now our suppliers are bringing them to us, which is great.
We're going
to
try your beets.
Readily available. Okay, correct. So quickly, let's just talk about the other concepts in the hotel and the menus that you're doing there.
Sure. So as Mark mentioned, you know, obviously we have our sports bar, high velocity sports bar, which is obviously, you know, you're not your average. It's a little bit of your higher end sports bar. But having a lot of the things that people expect or kind of want when they come into a sports bar, but again, still trying to keep the local and the natural. You know, we have, you know, natural beef on the menu. Obviously, the chicken on that menu is local, which we sell a few chicken wings in a sports bar, just a few.
Just a few.
Okay, you want to give us a number? Yeah. Can we hear?
We're probably in the upwards on an average day, I'd say 200 pounds.
I've seen a lot of chickens in wheelchairs.
Yeah.
A lot of wings.
What about craft brews? Are you buying a lot of local stuff?
No, that's a great question, because we have. And that's where, you know, we've brought in a lot of the 48, you know, Port City, Three Star, Lost Rhino. Flying Dog,
you mean local
DC Brow.
Three Stars, those guys.
Yeah, Three Stars. And they've all done well. Because a lot of the folks, because, you know, being a convention hotel, our audience comes from all over the country or all over the world. And you can get Sam Adams in California, or you can get Estella in Tech, you know, anywhere. But, you know, Port City, which again, right down here in Alexandria, has done.
Well, I think you also have an educated consumer. People know now. I mean, the craft beer scene is national, and people know when they go to different cities that it's every city has their own take on it.
Yeah.
And now they can experience it.
So, and that's one thing that when we were pulling this list together and making sure that we had a strong influence from the local area, and even in just here in D.C.
Well, and I think it's important to know, I mean, even though you're this very large hotel connected to the convention center, you are looking to bring in locals, right? I mean,
and we've already seen that, you know, just even with the run that the Wizards had, you know, each night in the sports bar, and then even in Dignitary. You know, which will have a patio for great people watching right out there on 9th and Mass. So that's, you know, and that's also one of our objectives, is to build that local audience in addition to our hotel guests.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, we didn't get to talk about Dignitary, so I feel bad, but can you just give us a quick 411 on it?
Sure. Dignitary is, it's kind of quick little bites, high-end, you know, bar bites. Beets out, Nikki's Beets will definitely be one of the items are on that menu as well.
Look how happy this makes me.
Yes.
And we had the number one selling sandwich at G.
We did. We came up with the number one sandwich at G at Mike Isabella's restaurant. Just saying.
I just tell her what to do, and
right.
She does it.
Okay.
Pretty much.
Well, can we just tell everybody where it is and how they can find you, please?
Sure. We're at 901 Massachusetts Avenue, basically take up the entire block between 9th, 10th. Mass and L Street. You can't miss it. Right adjacent to the convention center.
No, thank you both for coming in today. Well,
thank you so much.
Thank you for having
us. All right. Back to New Zealand.
All right. Dr. William Forrest, step up to the plate.
A return guest. So nice to have you back in studio.
My pleasure.
Have you been lonely for us?
I have. I've thought of you
very rarely, but you'll deal with it. All right. So let's talk about Forest Estate Winery. And I have to throw in that you're a founding member of the New Zealand Screwcap Initiative. So that sounds screwy to me, but I want to hear
kinky,
about it.
Sounds kinky, doesn't it?
It does sound kinky. A little kinky.
But that's a different show, Dr. Forrest.
That's a different show.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about the winery.
Well, we're a family-owned boutique winery. I'd like to think of it as craft. See, everyone's using the word craft these days.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're taking a wide variety. We do, I think, 22 different varieties and actually 37 different wines in varying quantities from 100 to 50,000 cases. And we take them all around the world.
So since we've had some different wines today, what is the wine that you're really – what wine will you be pouring for us and what should we look for in
it? I'm pouring the Doctor's Lower Alcohol Sauvignon Riesling today.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, as you know, I come from Marlborough and Marlborough's the home of Sauvignon.
Mm-hmm.
But today it's Riesling, something different from Marlborough.
Okay. And why? Why is it so different?
It's – well, Riesling's a great grape. It's a cool climate grape. Mm-hmm. Marlborough's a cool climate region. It should do it well, and it does. It's really fantastic. And having it at 8% alcohol rather than 14 is a plus.
Why is that?
Well, you can drink two glasses and still drive.
Okay.
You know?
No, but was that something you tried?
Who wants to drive?
Like, yes, that's the way to do it. But is that what
that's
you were trying to do?
That's why God invented Uber, I think, isn't it?
When you drop the alcohol, you actually increase the flavor. They become lighter and more delicate and fresher.
Look at Anna back there.
It's actually a new experience for wine drinkers. So it suits different climates, hotter climates. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
Excellent.
All right.
Well, while you pour that, let's bring Greg Nivens up to the mic.
Greg, fair warning, we're gonna go to a commercial in a couple of seconds. But Greg Nivens is the founder and CEO of the Trigger Agency, and Trigger puts on these huge, huge Big Mama wine and beer and food festivals all over the mid-Atlantic. Is that fair to say? Is that your...
We go from New York to Tampa, and so up and down the East Coast.
We were just out at National Harbor for that event.
A lot of fun.
It was a lot of
fun.
Yeah,
we did our show live, and we're going to be at the one at Tyson's on May 31st doing Foodie and the Bees live again. So
Next week, or 2 weeks from now.
2 weeks. But, I mean, just because we brought up DC Brow and Three Star Brewing... Those guys are going to be joining us on stage because we're going to do a blind beer tasting. Greg is going to pour a bunch of beers, and Dave Coleman from Three Star and the guys from DC Brow are going to get stumped on the beers.
Yeah, I'm going to participate in that because I know my beers.
Yes, I know you do, but it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, let's talk about Tyson's. Why? This is a new one for you. So what made you decide to go to Tyson's? Thank you.
Well, it's a new event. Tyson's has a great organization, and this really is a fundraiser for their organization called the Tyson's Partnership.
Okay.
And they really want to activate the community there because you've got, with the Metro that's just come in, they are currently building enough housing for, I think, like 50,000 people over the next 4 years or something crazy.
Okay.
And so with our nonprofit, the Spirit of Hope Children's Foundation, and the Tyson's Partnership. This is a fundraiser because most of the stuff in Virginia, most of the wine festivals, even the ones we produce, are all normally Virginia wines.
Mm-hmm.
And this festival will be a little bit different. This is going to be all international wines, international beers and spirits. It's a little bit different take on a wine festival that Northern Virginia has seen.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you're going to tell us why it's so different. This is David and Nikki Nels with Foodie and the Beast. We'll be right back.
Hey, Mom. Why is the sky blue? Why don't animals talk? Why do dogs have wet noses? Why is an 11 pronounced 1T1?
Kids ask a lot of questions.
Why do I have a belly button?
But you don't have to know every answer.
Why is the ocean salty?
Because you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent.
Why are there 50 states?
There are thousands of children in foster care who don't need every question answered.
Why is pizza round?
They just need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Hey, foodies, join us, David and Nikki Nellis of Foodie and the Beast, at the American Lamb Jam on Monday, May 19th at Eastern Market. Bring your taste buds as top D.C. area chefs serve up fantastic lamb dishes paired with local craft brews. There's a live butchery demo and a very special VIP hour. Visit fansoflambdc.com for tickets. That's Lamb Jam on May 19th at Eastern Market.
Paid for by American Lamb Board.
In today's competitive job market, imagine not having the reading skills needed to even fill out an application. 90,000 adults in D.C. are considered functionally illiterate. It takes a lot for an adult to admit they can't read. It takes even more courage to do something about it. The Washington Literacy Center teaches adult learners to read, giving them options and a bright future. Please give back to the community by donating today. Go to WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org and make your much-needed charitable contribution. Changing lives through literacy. WashingtonLiteracyCenter.org.
You're back on Fooding the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. We're talking to the impresario's impresario, Greg Nivens.
Yay!
Of Trigger
Yay!
Agency.
Yay, Greg Nivens!
Who's got this huge event coming up at Tyson's May 31st and 1st. Why don't you talk about some of the vendors? And you know, we talked about the beer tasting event, but just the diversity of what's out there. Because the event at National Harbor, the only thing you couldn't get there was open heart surgery.
Yeah.
Or maybe you could. I just didn't notice.
Yeah, this is kind of our kickoff to summer. So it's Victor Albiso is going to be there, and we're actually going to be grilling. We have a huge outdoor pit grill that we're going to put whole animals on, and we're going to grill a whole goat, a whole cow, a whole whatever he wants to grill. So we're going to be grilling that.
Yeah, and tell Vic what to grill.
He'll do
Vic
his
thing. Vic is going to do the grilling.
And lots of so we'll have a South American pavilion attached with that as well, which will have some taste there from South America and some wines from South America. Then we have our workshop areas. So we have three different areas of workshops, one including the cooking kitchen, mm-hmm. that all of the chefs will be there. Scott Druno and all those guys will all be there.
Well, I'll just tell you, because I have the list right here. I mean, we have Bart Vandala from Top Chef, who's coming in, Todd Gray of Equinox, Joe Yonan, who is the food editor of the Washington Post and of the travel section. We've got Pabu's Jonah Kim, Scott Druno, and our guest last week, Red Hen's Mike Friedman. So it's... an amazing group.
Bunch of nobodies.
But you also have two mixology segments, too, for people who are interested in mixology.
Beyond the cooking stage, we have two workshop areas where we'll have different things. We have mixology classes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do an actual vertical tasting, a 10-year vertical of Schaefer Hillside wine. We're going to do a whole hog butchering demonstration that mm-hmm. people can come out there and watch. And then you have all of the tents that are everywhere filled with boutiques. We have an art area. It's all art from local Northern Virginia artists. And then we have the VIP tent. The VIP tent's very unique. It's kind of a loungy area, and it's designed after the Orient Express. So every hour we're going to serve food that's going to take you from Paris through to Istanbul.
Neat.
So not Constantinople?
Not Constantinople, not anymore.
Okay.
So the show's unique. It's in a unique venue. It's a beautiful, very easy to get to location.
Can you explain?
Wait a minute, am I the only one that got that, for God's sake? Never mind.
Okay. Where is the venue? Because
literally,
people keep saying, where is it?
Where
so
is it?
Explain
where is it?
It.
Where
explain
is it? If you can remember years ago, which David can, he's the old one,
yes.
Where Cirque du Soleil used to perform in the parking lot right at the Tyson's Corner Mall Metro stop.
Okay.
There is a parking lot there that is what we have transformed into the Lerner Town Square.
Okay.
It is literally between Tyson's Corner Mall and Galleria. The Galleria.
But it's on the Tyson's Corner side, right?
It's on the Galleria side.
It's on the Galleria side.
And you just take the you take the Chambridge Road exit, and it is literally off the Beltway 30 seconds off the Beltway.
And where can people park? Is there parking?
Well, I cannot speak about, there is lots of parking there for guests. There are parking lots around there that are pay lots as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot say, because I cannot advertise, if there is a mall in that area that has parking. All I can say is there's lots of parking around there.
Okay.
Yes, we cannot advertise anything like that. So, but there's lots of parking all around the venue, and mm-hmm. it's incredibly easy to find, and just right. It's right under your nose, basically. Go online. There are directions online. Tickets available at tastetysons.com. Very easy, or Drink Eat Relax, which is our normal website. But Taste Tyson's. You can get tickets. Tickets are still very well. And let's, I mean, if you've got a way to do it, let's give away some tickets on air.
Well, I can't give away tickets on air, but I can give away tickets on Twitter. So we can certainly
do
some of that.
Let's give away when you do tickets, 10 pairs.
You want me to do 10 pairs?
Yeah, we're going to go to town for the
two. So let me ask you a question. So for people who are coming, if you buy a ticket, what does that get you? Does that get you everything, or are there levels of tickets?
There's a VIP ticket.
Okay.
And then there's a general admission ticket.
Okay.
Either one is fantastic. The general admission ticket basically gets you in the door, gets you unlimited samples of wine, beers, and spirits, mm-hmm. which we have over 100, 150 different SKUs. The VIP ticket then gets you into the VIP area and gets you into some select seminars and workshops. But the cooking demos are all open for everybody, and there's lots of fun things for people to do.
I know I sound like a shill because we're going to be there doing our thing, but these events are awesome. I think that in 2 days you had, 11,000 people at National Harbor?
National, yeah.
It's a killer event.
Well, so. And just again for Foodie and the Beast, we're going to be doing a blind beer tasting
at
on air.
What time are we at, 11?
No, we're on at 3 o'clock on Saturday.
Yeah, I knew that.
You know nothing.
3 o'clock.
So we are going to bring in all the fabulous beer guys in D.C., including Teddy Folkman, Dave Coleman. We're going to put blindfolds on them and us. Greg is going to pour beers, and then we are going to taste them and guess what they are, as well as the people who are watching us.
And
everybody
now I'm
going to
stop
it.
You because okay. we want to get our three guests from New Zealand back on the on the microphone for 2 seconds.
We have Mal more than 2 seconds. We have plenty of time.
Right. Let's talk about screw caps because that's a relatively new thing. And some people...
All three of you, come on up to the mic.
Come on, step up to the plate.
New Zealand seems to be really at the forefront of it. Yes?
Yeah, they did it right. We all got together. We all shared the technology. We all learned how to do it properly. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we've sent a bad bottle anywhere in the world.
Well, what is properly? I mean, why would people be against it and say, oh, gee, that's a terrible way to bottle wine?
There's no reason. And now 13 years down the track, I can give you a 13-year-old virtually any varietal that's stunning under a screw cap. And that's the ultimate proof.
Was it because the world's running out of cork? Is that the idea? I mean, is that...
Or because wine was going... There were so many corked bottles.
There were so many corked bottles. Mm-hmm. And cork was great technology 200 years ago. But, technology and life's moved
on. When I was a kid.
Well, Anna, at your vineyard, was that something that you guys went to, or did you start with the screw tops?
No. So we've been making wine for 30-something years, 37 mm-hmm. years. So cork was the traditional way. We started with cork, but we have moved 100% to screw cap now.
Really?
We don't send a bottle of cork from our winery. In fact, our corker has been removed from the bottling line and will never be seen again. We're definitely on board.
I heard about
Mom,
the case
about
of the missing corker.
It was never a question for us, really. We didn't start making wine until after the screw cap initiative was underway.
Okay.
And we just didn't consider it cork as an option.
You just didn't even consider it. Wow. And is there any sort of, does anybody come back to you with no, I want my cork? I mean, I just feel that it's still, is it a hard sell at all or no?
Not in the New World or over here. In some parts where we export into China, and they have this attitude that, well, they've been misled by some of the old world producers that good wines have to be in cork, but they're slowly learning the truth.
We got a lot of problems communicating with them anyway. So.
It's just education, it's really just an education issue, and we're doing a lot. Every winery who's on board with screw cap are really promoting the fact and explaining to people why we just love screw cap so much.
And you know what's funny about the New World thing now? America is now behind. It's the least screwed wine in the world.
You know, John, I just want to say, I have been talking to my wife about that for years. Same conversation.
Well, obviously a lot luckier than you in New Zealand.
All right. Well, we have just a minute left with you all. Tell us where we can find your wines.
Look, right through all the good wine shops in D.C.,
Let's get Eric up here.
Eric, come on, tell us where we can find everybody.
Okay, as John said, a lot of the good wine shops in the region carry the wines, Balducci's, Calvert Woodley, Schneider's, Bassin's, Cleveland Park, mm-hmm. Whole Foods has some of our varietals, and some of the great restaurants in town who will also be celebrating at our barbecue at the New Zealand Embassy today.
Excellent.
All right. So. Thanks. All right,
thank
guys.
You guys.
Thanks
thank
for
you so
us.
Much for joining
thanks
us.
Thanks for having us.
Commercial for us.
Yes.
Join us at Lamb Jam
right
tomorrow night at Eastern Market. Nikki and I will be judging a couple of different things, I guess.
Yes.
Competitions. But Lamb Jam is this unbelievable lamb fest at Eastern Market. Come and enjoy. There are lots of tickets still available.
No, there's not.
Yeah, there are still a few.
No? There are a few, but there's not a lot.
To me, that's
there's
a
like
lot.
Five.
A few is a lot.
There's only a few.
This is our first fight, everyone. Okay. But join us there tomorrow night if you can.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And just be sure to check out everything you heard on the show today and lots more that's going on in and around the D.C. area on the listeareyouonit.com. Mm-hmm.